Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you so much for joining us for a few moments today as we continue our look through this big old monster box of baseball cards for my own personal collection, a very small percentage of what I had when I was a kid. And chances are you had these cards too, or at least these types of cards, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it. We had a pretty good time last time around looking at the 1981 Fleer set, the sad story of Larry Cox. Today, it's the 1981 top set. I'll talk about that and the player that I pulled in just a moment. But first, if you want to interact, do so at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter. Again, that's Wax and Gum Stains. Picked up quite a few followers after our Larry Cox podcast, so thanks for joining us. If you could do me a favor, just reach out to one friend and say, hey, you got to give this a listen. Because clearly you followed us, you liked what we did the first time around, and hopefully you'll like what we do moving forward. And moving forward, this podcast will appear 2-3 times a week. Kind of depends on how much free time I have, which is very little, but I have a lot of fun doing this. It not only brings back some good memories for me, gives me an excuse to rummage through some old baseball cards, but also hopefully brings back a few memories for you as well. And again, you can share memories, thoughts, comments, whatever's on your mind about the good old days of baseball card collecting, or even if you still do it now, and again, to a much smaller extent, I still do today, thanks in part to my 6-year-old son who I've gotten into the hobby. You can communicate with me again at Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. All right, so there you go. That's the show. That's how we do things around here. And normally I would just pick one card from one of the 5 columns in the monster box. But in these early podcasts, I'm going to go set by set, or I shouldn't say set by set, you know, collection by collection, because I don't have any complete sets in these early to mid 80s groups. So I'll have some commentary about the set and, of course, that particular player that we pulled. So we had 81 Fleer yesterday. Today we have 81 Tops and a great card that just comes out of nowhere. Screaming Tim Stoddard! He's Howard Dean, and he approves of this message. It is an election year, after all. Of course, Tim Stoddard, a relief pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles for much of his career. He did play for a few other teams. I'll tell you about that in just a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about the 81 Topps design. And I actually like the 81 Topps design. I know some people are on the fence on it. You either like it or you don't. Some people just think it's boring. Some people think it's plain. I think when you are comparing the Donruss and Fleer releases from that year, the first year that those two companies could release the Major League Baseball Players Association approved, licensed baseball cards, you can pick one over the other. And, you know, certainly each type of card has its own merits that you could say that this one is better than the other one. But I just think after, especially the previous 3 or 4 sets from Topps, when they still had a monopoly in the game, I didn't think the designs were that great. I thought some of them were good. I've always been partial to the 77 set. I like the 76 set as well. 78 and 79 is okay, but I thought the 1980 Topps set was pretty dull. You know, this was their last stand as the lone entity in the exclusively licensed Major League Baseball trading card. And I just thought they kind of laid an egg with the sash effect that was wrapped around the pictures of the players. It was very boring. You know, the back of the cards were hard to read because you had blue and black ink on that gray cardboard. And I was never a big fan of it. But I like the 81 Topps look because it's a little cleaner. It's a little more genuine. It's a lot easier to read on the back, as we'll discuss with this particular Tim Stoddard card. So I like it. Curious what you think, if you like the 81 Topps set or if you don't. And again, you can share your thoughts at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter. Now, I know that Josh Wilker, the author of Cardboard Gods, which is a great book, came out about 10 years ago. If you haven't read it yet, do so. And it'll have a much bigger impact on you if you are a parent. If you have young children, it'll have a different meaning for you. But even if you aren't a parent and you're a collector, somebody who collected maybe 20 or 30 years ago, I think you'll appreciate a lot of the stories that Josh had in the book. And, of course, the stories in the book, Cardboard Gods, correlate to him growing up with an older brother, a much older brother. I think his brother was maybe 5 or 6 years older than he was. So they had a lot of things in common, like baseball cards. But as the older brother got into his teenager years and into early adulthood, there was really not much in common between the two. And it's kind of a heart-wrenching story. And I know that Josh just craps all over the 81 top set, in part because he didn't like the design. He didn't like some of the players that were involved, in particular Steve Carlton, who had some nasty things to say about people. So Josh had some nasty things to say about Steve Carlton. And he mentions in the book that the 81 set, 1981 was the last year that he bought baseball cards. So you may absolutely despise the set or the players in the set and what it stands for, like Josh Wilker, or you're like me, you give it a thumbs up. I'm not saying it's one of the best designs in Topps history, but it's pretty good. And here's my reasoning for it. In fact, if you're looking at this Tim Stoddard card, you've got a pretty big picture here. Takes up about 85-90% of the card. In fact, it's kind of double framed. You've got the white border and then you've got a colored border around the picture. So the frame takes up a lot of space, but it actually kind of gives it some nice depth to it. You've got some pretty good photos in there. Now, the Stoddard photo is actually a pretty funny photo, but, you know, there are some action shots. There are some posed photos. There's some, you know, candid moments like Stoddard yelling at somebody, I guess, in the dugout. So you've got a nice little mix of photography here. Also, in the lower left-hand corner, you've got the hat of the team that the player plays for. Right next to the hat is the player's name. And then in the lower right-hand corner, in a smaller baseball, Topps wants to remind you that you are indeed looking at a Topps baseball card, which is something that you didn't see too often in the previous sets. Now, I know in 1979, there was a baseball, I think, on the left corner of the card that had a much bigger Topps logo. The now legendary Topps logo with the lowercase t that kind of curved around like a fish hook. And, you know, that actually took up a lot of space. But other than that 79 set, as I'm racking my brain, I don't believe Topps ever put their logo on the front of a card prior to that. But of course, it's 1981. The courts had said that Topps could no longer have a monopoly on the trading card industry. So Fleer and Donruss comes along. And they wanted to remind you that you are buying the real one, as it would say, on the wax wrappers. So the competition is on. They have to stamp their name on the front of the card now, because when you just look at the very basic design of this, where you have big picture in a frame, player's name down at the bottom of the card, bottom center, team name at the bottom of the card too, much like the Fleer card at the lower left. The Topps card, just in very, very basic design description, the front, not all that different from the Fleer card. And the next time we take a look at a card, it'll be the 1981 Donruss set, and you'll see it's not a whole lot different than Donruss. So a lot of similarities here just in the basic design, but Topps was able to pull it off with a little bit of creativity. Now, one thing that I do like about the 81 set that really makes it stand out is the hat in the lower left corner. And it has the position of the player, and then it has the team name just underneath the position. Now, Topps could have very easily just taken any hat design, slapped it on there in the corner, and then just put the player position and team name on there. Not all that different from Fleer, which, as I criticized in the previous podcast, on that baseball where the team name is written, it just looks like it's a jelly pen where they just scribble the name of the team on there. Topps could have done something very basic and, quite honestly, boring like that, but they actually put some effort into the hat design, where the hat colors actually match the hat colors of the team. And there's no better example than this Tim Stoddard card, because you can see his hat pretty much fully here. Of course, the classic home cap for the Baltimore Orioles, which they wore from the early to mid-70s into the late 80s. It's actually made a comeback now with the big old Oriole bird head on the white front panel. You've got the orange bill and the black back panels. And you can see right here the card has the big white panel up front, the black panels in the back, the orange bill, and the orange button at the top of the hat. And if you go through the 81 set, you will see very similar detail to other teams that have multiple colors in their hats. I know the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, it had a white panel on their hat. The San Diego Padres, they actually not only had the yellow front panel on the brown cap, but they also did it in kind of a cone shape, which if you remember the Padres caps from the late 70s into the mid 80s had the brown hat with the yellow front, but not the full front panel was yellow. It was like three quarters of it, and just kind of, you know, it was almost like this vacuum look going from the base of the front panel up to the button. And also, one of the neat ones from that set, the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were still wearing their pillbox-style caps and their numerous yellow, black, white, pinstripe mix and match combinations made famous in the 70s. They were still wearing it in the early 80s. Well, there's a pillbox style hat with the little lines going around it for Pirates players. So if you have some 81 Topps cards just laying around at home, take a look at that. Maybe you haven't noticed it before. I thought it was a neat little detail about the hat on the front of the card that, you know, Topps put in a little extra effort for. They could have gotten very lazy and generic with it, but they didn't. And that's one of the reasons why I like the design. So, yeah, it's not quite the full card photograph type design that we see nowadays. You know, you've got a border within a border. You know, it's almost like a picture frame kind of design here. But I like the hat. And like I said, the photography is pretty good. And it makes for an appealing front card. Now, again, we'll be talking about the Donruss card the next time around. But if you look at the three big 1981 sets, in my opinion, the Topps one is the best one. Again, it's not one of the greatest ones. I mean, you look through Topps history, of course, 87 Topps for my generation was a great set. 83 Topps, we'll talk about that. Go back into the 70s, the 71 Topps set with the black border. One of my personal favorites, the 65 Topps set with the little pennant down in the corner. And I guess there's kind of a hearkening back to that style with the 81 Topps, but I like it. I really do. Now, you flip the cards over to the back. It was a lot easier to read than the 1980 Topps. For one, the 80 Topps, if you recall, in the left column, from top to bottom, you had the cartoon or some kind of little factoid, and then you had the player's height and weight up at the top right, and then all the stats down the right side. And it was kind of clustered a little bit. Well, the 81 Topps set a lot cleaner, a lot easier to read, as you've got the card number in the upper left. You've got the player's name up top, his position in the upper right. Nice, clean stat sheet right in the middle. And then if a player hadn't been around too long or didn't have too many stats to share, if there was room for the cartoon strips or a little factoid, then they put that down on the bottom. And, of course, with the black on top of red backing, it was a lot easier to read than the cards that came out in 1980, which, as I said, had black print on top of a blue background, and with the gray cardboard that Topps was still using, very hard to read. The 81 set, not so much. And the 81 set is still plentiful. It's still out there. Granted, it is a 35-year-old set, so it's a lot harder to find quote-unquote new packaging, unopened wax packs, or in particular wax boxes. But if you look hard enough, you can find them. I found years ago retail store wax or rack packs, and if you go on eBay, you can find those retail rack packs relatively cheap, like $10 each. And you know, when you're talking about a 35-year-old card set, it's not that easy to find something that old, that readily available, and that relatively affordable. Of course, the 81 set doesn't exactly have any monster stars that just knock your socks off. I know one of the biggest rookie cards is Kirk Gibson. Ricky Henderson's second-year card was there. Of course, some of the stars that emerged in the mid to late 70s, they have early career cards. So you've got your Robin Yount, your Paul Molitor, your Alan Trammell, your Lou Whitaker. Let's see, who else from those early days? I'm racking my brain here. Carlton Fisk is another one. Andre Dawson, Dale Murphy. So you've got quite a few star players who had been in the league for 5, 6, 7 years. They had their cards here. Mike Schmidt, Andre Dawson, and then even some veteran players. Pete Rose, that one's still worthy. Steve Carlton, still worthy for most people. Unless, of course, you're Josh Wilker. You probably don't like it that much. Nolan Ryan, Tom Seaver. There's a lot of great players in this set. And one of the cool things about the 1981 set is it was the first year that the traded set came out. Now, it's not the first time Topps had traded cards. In fact, in 1974, 76 as well, Topps created some traded cards for players who were traded right before the season. So if they were traded like during the winter meetings, before Topps went to press, they would go out and create typically like 8 to 10 cards of some of the bigger name players. And of course, they would airbrush them in the incredibly awful airbrushing techniques of the 1970s. But this time around, it was different. The top set, the base set, was 726 cards, but they would add 130, I believe the number was, cards in a later set. And unlike the traded sets that came around later in the 80s, where they would assign a card number and then put the letter T behind it, so like card number 24T stood for 24 traded, they basically just added on to the set. So the first traded card was 727, followed by 728, and on and on and on, up into the upper 800s. So that's a rather unique part of the 81 set here. And of course, the traded sets would turn out to be pretty popular, especially if you had a rookie who made a huge splash on the scene during that season. One of the best examples I can think of is Cal Ripken Jr. He has a rookie card in the 82 top set, but it's one of those Orioles Future Stars card where he's there with two other players. So he didn't get his first true lone baseball card, if you will, until the 82 Topps traded set. Of course, Barry Bonds in the 86 Topps traded set. Greg Maddux, Fred McGriff in the 87 Topps traded set. So you had some players who their rookie cards came through the traded sets, and that way you didn't have to wait around for the next year to get that rookie card. You could go out and buy the traded set and have that true rookie card in your hand before the player's second year came around. And of course, it was brilliant marketing for Topps because you were able to help push some product a little more. The 132 card traded sets, even if there was only one worthy player in that entire set and everybody else was either a low-level rookie who made a major league debut or a player who truly was traded and you just needed a piece of cardboard with his picture with his current uniform on and not as much airbrushing, just that one player could move all sorts of units of traded sets. And of course, the other companies eventually got around to adding traded sets. Fleer would call their set the update set. And then Donruss had a set called the Rookies. And if you were a fan of rookie baseball players, that was a great set to have. It wasn't as big as the Topps or Fleer sets, but the Rookies sets that would come later on. If there was a year that was just chock full of young stars that were up and coming, the rookie set was great. So it all started really in 1981 in full effect. Like I said, Topps did it a few times in the mid-70s where they just took a handful of players and did up a traded card so that they had something going into the next season. And like I said, most of those pictures were airbrushed and not too well. But with the 81 set, they were able to add on a little over 100 cards to the set with players who had been traded or youngsters who had come up and had made an established push at the major leagues, either late in the 1980 season or, as it would turn out, in the strike split 1981 season, let's just say the first half of the 1981 season. So 81 Topps, one of my favorites. Again, I like the design, and some people, like I said before, you either love it or you hate it. There's really no in between. You really think like I do, that's kind of a nice design, a little better than what you saw in the previous year sets, or you just absolutely hate it because it's boring or it's on par with Fleer and Donruss from that year. And because Topps, of course, had a huge head start over the competition, basically had a monopoly in the trading card business for 35 years, You would think they would come out with something better than that. If that's your opinion, that's totally fine. That's kind of my opinion about the 82 set, but we'll get to that in a few days. All right, now as for the player that we pulled here, Tim Stoddard, and I love this. You know, I've got probably, 400 cards from the 81 top set, and I just, you know, put my finger into the box and pull this one out. And I love this picture because Tim Stoddard just looks like he is barking orders at somebody. And I have to wonder, all right, who is Tim Stoddard yelling at? I mean, he just really seems to be going to town here. Of course, with the Baltimore Orioles, maybe he's barking back at Earl Weaver. Probably not a wise career move, but perhaps that's what he's doing. Or maybe he's yelling at somebody at the opposite dugout. Maybe he's yelling at the bat boy or he's yelling at the grounds crew guy. I don't know. If you have any ideas who Tim Stoddard's yelling at, Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter, let me know. If you've got a really good response, I'll share it with everybody later on in the program. If you have a good response, I'll share it with everybody in a future podcast. But I was wondering, who was Tim Stoddard yelling at? Because he just seems to be screaming at the top of his lungs at something. And as I did a little research on Tim Stoddard, I knew who he was in general. He's a pretty decent relief pitcher back in the late 70s and early 80s. But all you have to do is just flip this card over and you'll get a much better idea who Tim Stoddard was. And this is a guy who I really wouldn't want to get into a shouting match with, because as you can see on the back of the 81 Tops card, number 91, Tim Stoddard was a mere 6'7", 235 pounds. Let me say that again. 6'7", 235 pounds. That's a lot of bullpen beef right there. Not surprisingly, Tim excelled in the sport of basketball at a younger age. He's originally from Indiana, I believe spent some time in Illinois, and in the early 70s, he played for the NC State Wolfpack, one of the best teams in men's collegiate basketball history. They went 30-1 in that 73-74 season. The one team they lost to in the regular season was the powerhouse UCLA Bruins. Of course, you had Bill Walton and John Wooden, the head coach there. I mean, they were just an absolute dominant force, the Bruins were back then. And the one time that the Wolfpack were able to get some revenge on the Bruins, it was in the Final Four that year, and NC State won the championship. So Tim Stoddard, best known as a relief pitcher, turned out he was a pretty good basketball player, and he won a championship with NC State. And in fact, he would win a World Series with the Orioles in 1983, even though he didn't pitch in the 83 series. By then, he had kind of relinquished his role to Tippi Martinez. He is still the only man ever to win a championship ring in both an NCAA basketball championship game and a World Series. That's kind of neat right there, 9 years separating them there. Now, you don't often have, I mean, you have players who are crossover athletes. They'll play two sports at once, or they'll excel in two sports over their pro careers. But you don't see too many basketball and baseball players. Now, one that comes to mind, of course, is Danny Ainge. He was a utility infielder for the Blue Jays in the early 80s. Didn't really have much of a career there, of course, excelled in the NBA for a very long time with the Boston Celtics, I think the Phoenix Suns as well. Of course, he went on to coaching afterwards. But it's pretty neat to have a guy who won a championship in college basketball and then 9 years later a World Series in Major League Baseball. And Stoddard's the only one, amazingly, who has done that in the history of both sports. Now, while Tim Stoddard is best known as a Baltimore Oriole, he was traded to Oakland after the 83 season for a utility infielder. In fact, I think he played outfield too. He was just kind of an everyman. And he has one of the greatest baseball card names, Wayne Gross. And then the funny twist to the story is Stoddard was in Oakland quite literally for just a few months. Before the 84 season started, he was traded to the Chicago Cubs, and he was able to perform for the Cubs in the 84 playoffs. They, of course, won the National League East Division title, first time since 1945 that they were in the baseball postseason. Stoddard had a pretty solid career, 485 games, win-loss record of 41-35, 3.95 earned run average, and he was a pretty solid reliever. He wasn't great. He wasn't the type that you kind of put up there with Mariano Rivera or Trevor Hoffman, Lee Smith, Bruce Sutter, you know, any of those guys. But, you know, he had a solid few years in the late 70s and early 80s. It was a pretty dependable relief pitcher back then. But at 6'7", 235 pounds, that's some dominance on the mound there. And that's part of the game with a pitcher. That's one reason why I believe Nolan Ryan was so good into his 40s. Not only could he still chuck the pelota across the plate at 98 miles an hour, but Nolan Ryan was just such a thick guy, and he had that intensity in his face, and that alone, and I've had former major leaguers tell me this, that alone would strike enough fear in you. You're thinking, the old man's going to mow me down here. And I think that may have helped Tim Stoddard's game a little bit. While he certainly wasn't Nolan Ryan, if you're 6'7", 235 pounds, you know that you're probably going to get some high heat at some point. You don't want it coming from this really big guy who is 60 feet, 6 inches away from you. So is Tim Stoddard yelling at somebody here, or because he's 6'7", 235 pounds with the handlebar mustache, is he really part Sasquatch? Maybe he's a descendant from a Yeti. Maybe he's got family in the hills of Oregon, like Harry and the Hendersons. I don't know. I just don't want to cross his path here. Interestingly, after he wrapped up his pro career, he was the baseball advisor and played the role of a Dodger pitcher in the movie Rookie of the Year, which was released in 1993. And in my opinion, was one of the worst baseball movies ever. You can be angry at me if you liked it. I hated it. Of course, I was raised on Major League and Field of Dreams and The Natural. And, Rookie of the Year was just the first of several bad kiddie movies where some freak injury happens to a player. In this case, it was a freak arm injury to the kid, and he's got like super Tommy John surgery and can throw the ball 180 miles an hour, or the kid would somehow become the manager of the team. It was just one of many bad kid does good for bad team movies. And, you know, again, a lot of the baseball movies I saw came out in the 80s and just kind of had that, you know, Bob Costas nostalgia, or just the sheer stupidity of Major League, which was a great movie, kind of the slap shot of baseball movies. I wasn't that big of a fan of Rookie of the Year, but maybe that was just me. I was also very critical of some of the production values. I was a TV and film student at the time, and they took a few shortcuts in that movie. So I'm not going to blame Tim Stoddard because he's bigger than me, and he can probably rip my arm right out of my shoulder socket, being 6'7", 235 pounds, and probably related to a Sasquatch. But I wasn't crazy about the film. I'm sure he was a very good baseball advisor, but certainly the director of the film probably could have cut the film just a little differently. That's just my own two cents there. So there you go, the 1981 top set. Unique front, easy to read back, some decent star players in it. Nothing that was earth-shattering in terms of huge big-name rookies other than Kirk Gibson, but still a very entertaining set. Also, if memory serves correct, the last year that Topps had the big slab of gum in with the baseball cards. Most of us grew up in an age where the gum stick was about the size of like a Wrigley's Juicy Fruit, you know, just kind of that small 1-inch thick stick, where the 81 Topps, and of course a lot of the sets before that, had kind of a square piece there. Not that it made the stains on the cards any more friendlier. You know, if you had one of those few star cards and a piece of that gum just rotting right through it, it still pissed you off. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. So the 81 top set, Tim Stoddard, number 91, the subject of this edition of Wax Ecstatic. Again, you can join the conversation on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. Our next card will be 1981 Donruss, and then we'll wrap up our thoughts on the 81 sets right there. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thanks so much for embracing your inner nerd with Wax Ecstatic, the podcast that's all about my baseball cards and yours as well. See you next time.